Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com. To the voice behind the show for actors that are heard but not seen, although that's not exactly true in this particular case, because I'm looking at it right now and not in a weird creepy way. We've got the voice of thousands of characters, and that might be a slight exaggeration, but I don't care. The one and only Jennifer Hale on the show this week.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here.
I say that I'm looking at you because we're doing this through Skype, like a lot of voice actors do. I've actually been surprised in how much voice acting is done. I mean, it used to be in the day, it was a lot of ISDN stuff. If you weren't in the studio, you're doing a dedicated line. But I've been hearing more and more about people in the industry using things like Skype to do actual recording.
You know, I've used Skype through Source Connect, but I don't fully count on Source Connect. Sorry, guys, but I don't. I find it's often Source Disconnect in terms of recording. But I still rely on the old ISDN if I'm recording from a remote location or working from home. But truthfully, most of the time for games and, you know, cartoons and things, we're there. We're at the studio. I do use ISDN for promos and commercials and narration and stuff like that. But we will be directed quite successfully via Skype. When we worked on Mass Effect, Caroline dialed in on Skype every day, but she couldn't physically be there. And Chris Zimmerman, I've been directed via Skype by her as well. A few people use it.
Well, that just leads seamlessly right into Mass Effect talk, because, you know, that's obviously the big story right now with you. It's one of the biggest roles you've got. And I was looking through your resume, and the character of the female version of Shepard, which, God help me, it seems to be that's the preferred version. Between the male and the female, people seem to really go for the female.
Tell that to BioWare. They think 18% of people play FemShep. I'm like, you're wrong.
Well, those 18 are very vocal then, I guess. I don't know.
You know what? It's the squeaky wheel. I like that I have the squeaky wheels on my side.
So do you have a rivalry with Mike Mirr, the voice of the male Shepard?
You know, Mark Mirr and I don't have a rivalry at all. We're actually, you know, I consider us to be friends, and we don't hang out because he's in Edmonton and I'm here, but I think he's a fantastic person. He's so funny, and I just adore him. I think he's wonderful.
It seems, like I said, the female Shepard seems to be probably your second longest running character. I mean, the Mass Effect series has been going on for about 5 years. I think the longest running video game character you've done is probably Naomi from Metal Gear, just in terms of the difference between the first game and the most recent one.
I would say, or Bastila, because she has reappeared in the Old Republic, you know, here and there. But in terms of a regular character, yeah, probably so. Probably Naomi. Yeah.
How is, and you can answer this for either character, honestly, because there's plenty of fans of Metal Gear as well. How has either character changed in the years, you know, since the original version of those characters? How have they changed to what you're doing now with those characters?
Oh, man. I would say Shepard changed more than Naomi, simply because the weight of the universe was on Shepard's shoulders, you know, and Naomi had her own weight for sure. But, you know, she wasn't carrying the world. I think in that universe, Snake carries the world. Shout out to Dave Hader. we had a funny, actually, sidebar real quick. Dave and I were both going to the same ski mountain at the same time, and we found out via Twitter, because I was tweeting about a city that I passed on the way, and he was like, dude, are you going there? I was like, yes, I'm going. So we got there and we were skiing and hanging out, and we created this whole, just spontaneously, a whole Snake versus FemShep on the ski slopes rivalry via Twitter that weekend. It was hilarious. It was so much fun. He would tweet pictures of like a ski slope, you know, a snowbank behind him and go, where's FemShep? I don't see her. Is she in the snowbank? And I tweeted back, you know, saw the slopes, skied the slopes, went climbing while you were still asleep.
Wow. So, you know, so you've heard it here first. Naomi, harder than Snake. There you go.
Possibly.
We'll stick with the video games because you've done just a ton, and it may not seem obvious to everyone, but a lot of them are role-playing games, which makes sense given the sheer volume of dialogue in those kind of games. The few moments that you have free, do you ever get a chance to play any of these games that you do the voices for? And is that weird to hear your own stuff?
It's rare, and I don't do it much for two reasons. Number one, I'm not very good at it. Actually, three reasons. Two reasons? Three reasons? I don't know, a couple of reasons. I'm not very good at it because I haven't spent a lot of time doing it. I don't have much free time, and when I have free time, I have got to get outside or I'll go bonkers. I love rock climbing. I love horseback riding. I love traveling to really faraway places, really kind of remote. The more remote and the more obscure, the better. And so that... Fortunately, I work a lot, so I don't have a lot of free time. And I think the third reason is it drives me nuts. Tom Bissell, who's a brilliant writer, did an article in The New Yorker last fall on some of my work. And as part of the article, he made me play Mass Effect 2 for about an hour. And it was a great experience, actually. It was really fun, and I love shooting. And he said I was pretty good at it, so that made me happy. But I loved hearing it, but it also drove me nuts for this reason. I wanted to redo all my lines when I was done because I'm like, well, there's this detail. There's that detail. Now that I know that detail, I want to go back and do it again, you know, and that's how I am. If I just could keep redoing everything all day long because I just want to keep drilling down to the core of everything, you know, so it kind of drives me nuts.
That means, so I won't ask you to listen to this show then, in that case, just so you don't.
That I don't care about because I'm not affecting anyone's experience, you know, or dealing with betraying a truth or landing right on a truth by what I'm saying. I'm just telling you what I think, which is, you know, not that complex.
So right before we started recording, you had mentioned that you just made your first public comment about the Mass Effect ending.
Yeah.
And I don't want to completely tear that wound open on this show, but are you surprised at the response? And did you know when you were recording it that this response would be, that there was the potential for this response?
You know, I don't think about the response when I'm recording because that's not where my head is. My head is exactly wherever Shepard is at that moment or wherever whatever character I'm playing is at that moment. I don't think, my thought about the end user, i.e. you guys who, you know, the fans, the players, is to give you a real experience of whatever moment I'm staring at in that second. So I don't think about the end user as much. So it completely took me by surprise. I had no idea. And I'm thrilled and excited that people are so passionate on either side. It means that we've touched them. And that's a tribute to the writers and the creators of this thing.
With moving on from video games into cartoons, because you've been doing animated shows since the early 90s, I believe.
Mid-90s, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And... Looking at this resume, you've been in stuff that there's a couple of things on here that I kind of qualify as there's no reason they should have been as good as they were. and that includes a regular role on Skeleton Warriors.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And another show that utterly surprised me in how much I enjoyed it was Totally Spies. And in that you played not only two rival girls, but their mothers as well.
Right. I know. We're recording more right now, actually.
Really? Is that show still going or is that coming back?
That show is like the cartoon equivalent of the Terminator. It just, you can't keep it down. yeah, we're recording right now. Recording more episodes. Yeah.
So that would mean that show has been going for,
11 years, I think. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, we'll go and then we'll stop for like 3 or 4 years and then we'll get this surprise phone call that we're like, whoa, really? You want to do some? Okay, yeah, that'd be a blast. Let's do some more. So, yeah, it's fun.
Speaking of shows that are coming back, at least rumored to be coming back, there's been more rumblings in the last few months about a show you had a pretty memorable role on, Shaolin Showdown, where you were Catnap A, my wife's favorite character on that show.
All right, yes.
Can you talk any bit about a possible return of Shaolin Showdown?
Shaolin Showdown as such is not. Shaolin Chronicles, perhaps.
That's very cryptic.
That's all I can say.
All right.
Without written permission from everyone else, that's all I can say.
So I ask this a lot of people that we've talked to on the show that do both animation and video games, because it seems like there's very few people that do one or the other. It seems to be you kind of get where we can get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because we're not paid like the movie stars are. We got to keep the checks coming or we can't pay our mortgage.
Which of those do you enjoy more, video games or animation?
I enjoy them both for very different reasons. I love the intensity of a game, especially when it's well written, when you're dealing with a Mac Walters or, you know, and his team or a Tim Schafer or, you know, a myriad of other writers I've had the pleasure to work with. I love dropping into those universes. And I have to say, there's nothing that's crawled up under my skin like Mass Effect, just because of the role that I had in it, the intensity of it, the responsibility of that universe. You know, it's just, wow, an incredibly lucky thing for me. I love that about video games. They're also exhausting. I mean, a four-hour session doesn't sound that long, but when you consider performing basically a one-person show for 4 hours solid, with, you know, a couple of quick bathroom breaks. I'll come out sometimes, I'll actually be a little lightheaded just because of the focus involved in creating that universe. I've likened it to, in theatrical stuff, when you work green screen, if, you know, some of your listeners have either worked green screen or have seen little, you know, behind the scenes things about working green screen, you're working with nothing when you're filming a movie. It's just a green screen and they can then add in all their computer generated stuff after the fact. Gaming, doing a video game is like that, except they'll take the script, you know, make it about 10 times bigger, cut up each page into strips, throw them up in the air, pick one up off the floor and go, okay, go. This is the scene you're doing. Okay. No, this is the line you're doing in, we're not sure which scene, you know? So that's it. There's an intensity to it that requires tracking a lot of detail in your head. Doing animation, traditional animation, is so fun because it's so collaborative. And I mean, I learned most of what I know, you know, aside from, yeah, I went to a great fine arts high school and all that. And I learned most of what I know from my peers, who are the most brilliantly talented people you would ever want to meet. Dee Baker, Rob Paulson, Gray DeLisle. I mean, Kath CC, it's just a dream to be surrounded by these people. Frank Welker, my gosh, Frank Welker. They just to soak up what they do and what they know and how they do it and the genius of the different levels and the different styles and the, I mean, a million names are in my head right now. Jeff Bennett, Rob Paulson, it just goes on and on and on. I love that about animation. You get to be in the room with those guys. Steve Bloom, you know, Nolan North. We get to, when we did Wolverine and X-Men, they were both, we were all in the cast together, and it was just a dream to be in there with them. It was Steve and Nolan and Kari Walgren and me and you know, a few other people. I think Ian was in that one, Ian Ziering, from time to time. Yeah. And Jess Harnell. And I name all of them because they're so brilliant. And I learn everything from them. Everything. You know, it's fantastic. So I love that about traditional animation, to be in that room and be able to absorb all that genius and steal it.
Has there ever been, you mentioned how with like animation, you tend to all be in the same room, where video games, you tend to be all by yourself. Have you ever been in a situation where you've done video games? I think of like long cutscene games and where it's an actual like extended acting section, I guess. Have you ever been in a situation where they've recorded it like a traditional animation?
I have. 9.5 times out of 10, they don't. But the 2 times that I've done it where they do, it was under the direction of the incredible and much underappreciated Chris Zimmerman. She directed a game called Onimusha Buraiden. I did a couple of those as a couple of different characters. And we got to work, I think it was 3s, we got to work in that. And then when we did the later Metal Gears, we got to work together. Dave and I worked together, and Christopher Randolph and I recorded some together, and yeah, it was fun. Now, hold on, I have to also say mocap, completely different. I just did another mocap game. I've done a few now, and the latest one I did was so much fun because just happened to be the angle where I was. I could, you know, between takes, I could look over and see my character being instantly generated, and I could move my arm, and this thing that looked nothing like me would move its arm. You know, and it was just like, wow, so much fun.
So you were doing full body mocap then, not just facial?
No, full body. Yeah, I love mocap's my absolute favorite. Mocap is where how everything should be done. I I would constantly bug Caroline and the team going, can I do the mocap, please? Can I do the mocap for Shepard? Please, please, please. They're like, honey, no, it's already done. No, please. But yeah.
How much say, I mean, going with these long-standing characters, how much say do you have in the direction of a character, like as it's progressing from, I mean, within a single script, I mean, it makes sense that it stays, you know, somewhat static, but in, you know, over the course of a season or the course of a franchise, how much say do you have in the direction of a character?
Not much, honestly, because, you know, we're sort of we're not the last bit put on, but I liken us to the tip of a pen, you know, the part where the ink comes out. There's a lot more to the pen than the part where the ink comes out. And I don't know that it's my place to necessarily screw around with that. And I don't, unless I come across a line or a moment that feels so out of character and so wrong, I'll ask a question and say, okay, is there something here that I'm missing? Because this is feeling really out of character to me. And if it's on the rare occasions when it really is, they'll adjust it. But, you know, sometimes it's also just a piece that I missed or something I didn't know. And I'll go, oh, okay, now I can make that make sense. And then sometimes, very rarely, I have to just make it work. You know.
In some of the wrangling that it took to find you some time to get on the show, there was a lot of you know, we're going to do it this time, and then there's the sudden call, like, I got to go do this. I just imagine you and some of the other more high-profile voice actors getting, like, airdropped into locations for that. And now, are those sudden calls, are those for more acting stuff, or is that more commercials? Like, where does the suddenness come from?
The suddenness of the scheduling comes from a couple different places. Most of the time it's promo. I've been doing some promos lately for a couple of shows on a couple of different networks. And that's a very last minute business. Commercials as well. And then occasionally an audition will come down the pike that they really want to get me in on. And we just got it and it's got to be in by this time. So we got to go now. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been doing also more on-camera stuff, and it's a little bit of a busy time for that right now. So I've had a lot of, like, oh, tomorrow you got to go do this. Okay, I'm going.
What kind of on-camera stuff? Now, you actually got your start on camera.
I did.
And then you went on to do more, obviously more voice acting. What on-camera stuff can people find you in? If for people that are looking to figure out what Femme Shep looks like in real life.
You'll never see me. I just did a little bit on The Office, but ironically it ended up being a voiceover. It was a phone call from a couple customers. And it was fun because, well, I probably shouldn't say that part. Don't want to give any secrets away. And then, working on a couple independent film things, which, you know, we don't know enough about to really chat about it right now. I've been off the boards on camera wise for a while because I've been so busy, but I finally just put my foot down because I really am dying to get onto the Sci-Fi Channel, you know, the Sci-Fi networks, and really want to work on some of that stuff. And I've been putting it off because I've been so busy. And oh, but I've just finally decided to make it a priority and get on there.
Can I ask why? Like, what about the Sci-Fi? Is it Sci-Fi Channel or is just general? You want to do more sci-fi?
It's the genre, because it's so close to what I do already, and because frankly, I was ridiculously inspired by the Battlestar Galactica reboot, and that's the kind of work that I love. And I loved Caprica. You know, it didn't last long, but I really enjoyed it. I think Ron Moore and David Icke have created some brilliant stuff. And I love the medium because it's interesting to me and it fascinates me. And the crowd is so intelligent, you know, it's so forward thinking. You know, yes, it can get silly, but these are my people. What can I say?
Yeah. Nice. We got a couple questions from listeners that we want to address. One, I really had to giggle about this because I hadn't thought of it myself. It seems that, I'll just paraphrase here because it was a fairly long question. It seems that with a lot of male voice actors, there's the whole term face for radio. And we've had male actors on the show before, obviously, and you know, they're all fine looking people, but they always. They're a little more, I'll just tell you what this guy said, they're a little more funny looking. With female voice actors, especially the more popular ones, it seems that they're all really attractive. Why is that? Like, why do you think that you have to defend your, not maybe not defend your gender, but represent your gender? Why is it that the guys can get away with looking goofy is really what I'm, what he's asking there.
I think to answer that one, just look at our culture. That right there sums up the entire, at least, you know, American culture right there. You know, I mean, if it's true, I mean, I immediately was thinking of Steve Bloom and Nolan North and all these amazing looking guys who are voiceover gods. And I'm like, really? Have you guys seen these guys? Because they're kind of hot. But I thank you for the compliment to all of us. I will pass it on to my girls. And thanks. And yeah, well, I also think, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation about the ridiculous pressure on women in popular culture today to look great and, you know, be everything and do everything. I think it's absurd. We just miss so much of a person based on their appearance, and it's a bit ridiculous. That's one of the things I love about social media is that, you know, I've just joined Twitter a couple months ago, and I'm constantly impressed by the intelligence of these people that I'm communicating with. And, or I don't have, you know, unfortunately, I don't have time to communicate with everybody, but just that I see tweets from. And, you know, I love that faceless thing where you kind of get to somebody's spirit straight away. It's nice.
Taking that question, being a little more serious about it, you know, that's often been a complaint about just Hollywood and acting in general. Do you see that this like the same amount in voice acting, or is it less just because it's more based on your voice? Or
it used to be less. I have to say, it is changing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of why? I mean, is it because voice acting is just the voice actors themselves are becoming more media presences? Because I think I've seen more behind the scenes footage. You know, I think of things like all of the stuff behind Family Guy and all of the stuff on Simpsons where the voice actors themselves are becoming more visible, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be that producers and creators have an eye to that when they create their show. Like, they look forward to that day when everybody's on a panel on some big TV show and they want it to all look great. Or maybe it just happens that that's just all the way it fell. You know, I don't know. I can't make any assumptions about it because I'm not on that side. I have no information. I just have supposition and the occasional, you know, grumpy day about it. And, you know, but I mean, I have to say, I've been known to show up at a few sessions covered in dirt and grime and my disgusting horse poop covered boots and, you know, not all dolled up. I mean, look at me right now. I'm just in a sweatshirt hanging out.
Yes, but I admire your dedication to Mass Effect because you are wearing the N7 hoodie right now.
That is a complete coincidence, actually. I was freezing and I was like, oh, perfect. I mean, this thing's so warm. And then I came in here, I'm like, oh, perfect. That's just fate.
Nice.
Maybe it's what inspired me to finally answer the many tweets about the ending of ME3.
I think so. And we'll collect them all and then we'll have somebody else voice them on a later section.
Okay.
I think we should do that. We should, you know, since the so, and this is another thing I've noticed, voice actors have definitely embraced social media, like more so than I think even some of the more screen actors and things like that.
Well, we can get away with it because we're anonymous. I could tweet to 60 people and then run into 4 of them in the grocery store and they would never know, you know? But, you know, if someone like, you know, Trisha Helfer, if she replies to tweets, she could run into that person and be in, you know, be in a big hurry to get somewhere because of something she's got going on in her own life and be stuck. And then if she says, excuse me, I got to go, she's considered rude. Her privacy is gone, you know? So we're a little safer to do that sort of thing.
So really what I'm hearing is if you want to be rude to people, be a voice actor.
No, if you want to be connected.
Aha. Aside from the social media, I've noticed a lot of voice actors, they seem to fall down on the website stuff.
Oh, my website sucks.
Well, your website is actually not as bad as some I've seen.
It sat dormant for 11 years. And the only reason I updated it was because I was getting nominated for a Spike Award, and I needed to have it updated for that, because if, you know, anybody wanted to talk to me about it, okay. And I haven't touched it since. Sorry.
It has the nice creepy photo on the front. I think that's really the important thing.
Creepy photo. I like that photo. It's very anonymous. You can't really see what I look like.
Well, all you got to do is a Google image search there. So.
I know. It's kind of over now. That little fantasy of privacy of mine is gone.
So, of the things, now I'm assuming, judging from our email conversations and some of the other stuff, that you've got about 40 projects going at any one moment. What of those 40? What can you tell people about at this point?
gosh, I'm working on the most amazing animated thing that is so funny that I can't talk about. Also working on Totally Spies. Avengers is out. We're on the air. I think we're having a happy time there. Green Lantern is out. We're on the air. Diablo 3 is coming out.
That's right. That is probably the next huge game that you're going to be in.
Oh, is it? I know nothing about the size of these things. Good. I'm glad. I hope people.
Yeah,
are
Diablo 3 is a bit anticipated. I think
is it?
Safe to say.
Oh, good. Good. Yay. follow me, Jay Hale tweets. Let me know how you like it. What else have I got going on? Totally Spies. We're in production. It's so much fun. I'm back to arguing with myself again on Totally Spies. And then I'm starting a new game this week that I can't talk about. And then occasionally I'll stop in for a little extra Old Republic stuff. And, stuff like that.
So with the Old Republic, again, that's a MMO. So, I mean, and there's constant kind of new content being pushed out. Is that one of those where it's just regular calls like, okay, we need you in for this? Is that just an ongoing, is that almost like a day job at this point? I mean, obviously fewer hours, but.
I wouldn't call it that because I don't know what their future plans are. I was in recently. That's all I can say, I guess. Every couple months, I would say I've checked in so far. But, you never know what the future is planning, and you never know if it involves the Trooper or Satil or Bastila or any of that. So, yeah.
We had another listener question here. With huge games like Knights of the Old Republic and Mass Effect and all of these, for people that aren't going to be playing it four or five times all the way through, does it bother you that most of the people that play these games aren't going to hear two-thirds of the stuff that you've done? Or is that something that you think about at all? Or
no, I never thought about it. Not till you said it. No, I'm kidding.
I'm so sorry.
No, it doesn't bother me at all. No, I'm okay with it. Because I know it sounds cheesy, but it's whatever story you guys want to make, and I'm really happy I've got material there for whatever story you do want to make, and I'm okay with whatever you leave on the table because someone else will pick it up.
All right. A couple things we always like to ask people. Favorite role you've never done?
It's a hard call. Hold on, I gotta think about this one. What was that role that Michelle Forbes did so brilliantly in Battlestar? She was the Admiral. She was just unbelievable. Oh, I wish I could remember her name. Damn it. She was the Admiral of the Pegasus.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes, I do. I suppose I could look it up right now, but
best performances I've ever seen, and of course Mary McDonnell in Battlestar, and also I would love to have been Adama.
that would require some interesting makeup, I think.
You know what? Adama could be a girl. I'm just saying.
I could see that.
I want the boys' jobs. I want to start going out for these on-camera auditions, take a look at the breakdowns of what the roles are, and go, you know what? This guy over here, I could do that. Because you don't have to be a guy to do it. Move over. Let's give it a try.
I'm going to give you an idea. You can have this for free. I just want a credit for it.
Okay.
A complete gender swapped Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, done.
There you are. That's all yours.
I love it.
And then favorite role that you did do? Or how about this most fun role?
Again,
that might always be harder, I guess.
They're so hard. I can't pick one. And they're all fun for different reasons. Like, I love the Cowboy Bebop movie because Mary Elizabeth McGlynn is such a fantastic director. We had so much fun. It was such a great cast. I'm the voice of Cinderella, right? And have been for many years. And
is that scary to do a voice like Cinderella?
Totally. Are you kidding? The responsibility is huge. All these little kids, the whole Disney, the brilliant and so sweet Disney thing that is, it's important. We need a little piece of that in our culture. That's an honor. And, Shepherd right now, I have to say my personal response to being, done with Mass Effect 3 was a little bit of depression. I was like, I miss Shepherd. I miss working with Caroline and Mac and those, Suzanne and Patrick and everybody and knowing that, Casey and just looking forward to those sessions. I miss that, having that little carrot on a stick, further in my day or my week or my month. I missed that. That was fun because the writing just got so great. And another favorite was Brutal Legend with Tim Schafer. Oh my gosh, you can't go wrong. You know, you just can't go wrong with that whole setup. And Chris Brown and so much fun.
Does the director really, I mean, you've mentioned several directors on this show already. Does the director really make that big of a difference in terms of the performance that you get out of it?
Director makes all the difference. I mean, we had the genius of Ginny McSwain on the first two Mass Effects and Chris Borders and, you know, Chris Brown and Brutal Legend. And I mean, you know, I have been blessed to work with so many great directors. I mean, Chris Zimmerman, she's a treasure. She needs her own like award that belongs to just Chris. It's just, and Caroline, I mean, it's such a collaborative thing for me. Director makes all the difference, you know, makes all the difference. And any directors I haven't mentioned is just because I can't remember them right this minute because I, you know, have a memory like a sieve. I can't think of any that I don't like working with. I really think that the directors in voiceover are brilliant and they deserve a lot more credit than they get.
Going back a little bit to talking about doing shows like Skeleton Warriors and some of these, is there a difference from the production side of doing a show that is more, it's, you know, I think of things like Skeleton Warriors, and I think that is a show that was designed primarily to sell toys. Whereas you get a show, and I'm not even being overly cynical about it. That's just, you know, that's kind of how it was.
But, I hear you.
And then you've got a show like Shaolin Showdown, where it's just there to be, you know, that where the show is the thing. Is there a difference in how those recordings work, or is there?
No.
Not really?
They're done the same. You know, I think there's a difference in how they're marketed and also what sort of a chance they're given. If a show is primarily designed, you know, as a toy seller, as a big money maker, and it doesn't hit straight out of the gate, it's usually gone. You know, we did such a fun show, Class of 3000 with Andre Benjamin. Andre is half of
I remember that show. Yeah.
And I loved it because I got to sing, which I've, you know, as a singer first, really. And, that show, I think, was one of those where they had like a lot of money into it and a lot of high pressure on it. And I'm sure probably because of several other circumstances, not the least of which being that Andre's in such incredible demand and he's a very brilliant and busy person. We didn't do, you know, more than a season or two. And that was a bummer because I loved doing it. It was just such a great, great fun thing to do.
So now we got to get you on Glee, I think is.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Hey, you're looking for on-camera work, you know? I mean, it seems to be obvious.
Commander Shepard rocks Glee.
That would have probably the highest rated episode they've done so far, as long as they market it like that.
Right? There we go.
Absolutely. So, final question. Years ago, one of the, I believe it was Tress MacNeille, was asked what you need to do to break into, basically to get her job, is to break into this. And her response was, you need to have me killed.
Of course it would be.
Yes. Do you think you can come up with better advice for people?
Better advice than, well, for one, do not touch Tress MacNeille because you'll have to come through me. Gosh. It's a job. Treat it like a business. Nothing is personal. Work your ass off. Acting first. Actually, business and acting. Acting first, business second. Your emotional needs, 105th on the list. And just learn about people. Nothing's off limits. Access your own experience and get into a good acting class and treat it like a business. When I first started, I made a demo tape. And I would redo that demo tape like every 3 or 4 months for the first couple years and drive my mentors crazy looking for advice. Thank you, Greg and Courtney. And they were so kind and they were so sweet and tolerant. Boutwell Studios in Birmingham, they gave me my start. And I would redo that tape constantly. And I would put on a little suit, which is really funny because I was still in my teens. And I would go cold calling ad agencies to give them my little demo, see if they would listen to my demo and see if they would, you know, if they had any work for me. And then I do make myself do follow-up calls, which were dreadful and, you know, just gave me pits in my stomach, but I treated it like a business, you know, and through that work, I was able to create enough volume to actually get to be any good at what I do, you know? So
I actually literally was just texted a question from a good friend of mine. So I feel like I have to ask, as you've been doing conventions and things like that, how many times do people ask you to do the Shepard voice for their voicemail?
I don't think I can count. I mean, I've only done about, I think I've done 3 conventions. I think it's like 3 now. And yeah, I get that a lot. Yeah, I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite voicemail in the Citadel.
Nice. I like that. Any conventions in the future for people that are trying to track you down and ask you similar questions?
Yes, I'm going to SAC Anime in Sacramento end of August. And for those of you overseas, I will be in Sydney and Perth at Supernova in June. And that's all I know of for sure right now. Yeah.
All right. And you can find all of that information. Well, okay, not very much information on her website, jenniferhale.com. But you can follow her on Twitter because she loves the Twitter.
The Twitter's kind of fun. The Twitter is. Yeah, I'm enjoying the Twitter. And yeah, I will definitely post on Twitter when I'm going to be somewhere. I'm at jhaletweets.
And all that will be in the show notes as well. So you have to do literally almost no work to follow her. Which is really the way the internet should be.
I think you have to push the button. I think that is important for the Twitter to push the button, but I don't know.
There's no other way to end it but that. Thank you again, Jennifer Hale, for coming on the show. It's honestly a huge honor to talk to you. You're one of those characters or one of the actors that I find one thing that you like, or one thing that I like you in, and then I look you up and it's like, oh my God, you've been, I found out I've played you in like 6 games and didn't even realize it. So it's always interesting. And I recommend this to all our listeners, pick someone and then look at their resume. You'll be shocked at what you can find. So thank you again, Jennifer.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, Evan. Thank you.
This has been The Voice Behind, a production of the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode, and for outtakes from this and other episodes, as well as news and commentary from the voice actor community, follow our Twitter feed at twitter.com/thevoicebehind or on Facebook at facebook.com/thevoicebehind. Comments, questions, and suggestions are more than welcome at voice@fancypantsgangsters.com. Thanks so much for listening.